And it's Carmine Appice, even though I don't look like Carmine Appice, I am Carmine Appice. And you're listening to Tom and Zeus on the Shout It Out Loud cast. So keep listening, keep rocking.
Greetings and salutations. Welcome to Shout It Out Loudcast. Don't turn your radio dial. You're in the right place because the first episode of the ARC interviews are here. We are calling this one, Which Guitarists Choke People? Which Guitarists Hate Haircuts? And why the hell is Graham Bonnet here? Tommy Zeus, what's up?
Yeah, we're here. We never stop recording, right? So what's better than another sidecast? And this is our first one. We're going to try to continue these and get people involved with all these ARC albums we've done, whether they're a member of the band or producer, engineer, whatever. And we got Zeus's favorite, Graham Bonnet.
Yeah, he was gracious and hilarious. We just wrapped up the interview. You guys will hear it. Graham was fun. And the fun part about this, we were just saying, is like, we don't know what we're going to get when we talk to these people, because we don't really have conversations. We don't do the pre-interview shit like they do on the Tonight Show.
Right.
And we don't know what we're going to get, a happy person, a grouchy person, or what you're going to hear next. We think you'll like it. So let's get right to it. So starting us off with our album review crew interviews, our first guest is Graham Bonnet, the legendary singer for one of our album reviews, Down to Earth from Rainbow. Graham has played with just about everybody that's pretty cool in music. Richie Blackmore, Cozy Powell, Roger Glover, John Lord, Mickey Moody, Yngwie Malmsteen, Bob Kulick, Slash, Vivian Campbell, Don Airey, and I'm sure a ton more. We are honored to have you, Graham. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's very nice to be here and to talk about my favorite album. Well, one of them, I'll say. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent.
That's awesome.
So let's just get started with Down to Earth. So it was obviously a change for the sound of Rainbow with the album, with the album itself, and then with your vocal style. Tell us about how you got to Rainbow and your feelings about the band before you recorded Down to Earth, and what changes that you brought to the band with Down to Earth, because everybody thinks of that album, the two huge songs, All Night Long and Since You've Been Gone, classic songs.
Yeah. Well, I didn't, to be honest with you, I didn't know who Rainbow was when I got the telephone call from Roger Glover, who was actually working with a friend of mine, Mickey Moody, on the Whitesnake album, I believe, at the time. And Mickey Moody and I were managed by the same people. And Roger said to Mickey, well, we're looking for a new singer for Rainbow. And he said, well, I can put you in touch with Graham. They'll be talking about getting in touch with me. And so I put you in touch with Graham because I have his telephone number and his shoe size and everything else, you know. So Roger called me up and said, would you like to come over to, it was sort of on the border of Switzerland and France, this place. And I said, well, for what? And he said, well, to audition for us for this band called Rainbow. I had never heard of them, which I just said, I think. And so I went to my manager at the time, David Oddy, and I said, who is Rainbow? And so Mickey Moody took me aside and said, this is who they are. Basically, was Deep Purple come Rainbow kind of thing. You know, so, oh, Deep Purple, I knew who they were, but I didn't know who Rainbow was. And Mickey said to me, yeah, I'm in that. He said, they're a great band, blah, blah, blah. Tell me who was in the band, et cetera. And so my manager said, you go over there and audition for them. Well, as I said, I had no idea what they'd done, Rainbow. And so I had to buy the albums or listen to the albums that Ronnie Dio had sung on before. And I learned what they'd done. Well, one song, a song called Mistreated, which actually wasn't one is originally original recording, but that was a song they wanted to me audition with. So I learned that song and went over and sang it at them, and kind of got the job. I remember going over there thinking, well, I don't know what this is, but okay. So I went there, did this one song, and came back to, at the time, went back to London. And I said to my manager, I still don't think I'm right for this band, because it's that sort of semi-classical stuff going on. Whereas I've been used to singing along with, you know, more R&B and pop stuff. Mm-hmm. And they were very heavily classically influenced. And I was sort of a bit scared of doing that, you know. And so he said to me, no, this will be really good for you, Graham. And of course, it was good for him more than me, and money-wise. And he said, go back, and they want to start recording with you. I said, well, who else has been auditioned? He said, well, about 70 other singers, apparently. This is the legend, I think. And I said, well, why me, you know? And they like your voice, and that's just the way it is. Because they remember you from other recordings I'd done in the past. Back with my cousin in 1968, I was in a group with him called the Marbles. Yep. And the two of us, it was just the two of us actually, were recording Barry Gibb songs. And that's how we sort of got started in my recording sort of new life. Because I came from a small town, we had a garage band, we went down to London, and we, for some reason, in the audience were sitting the old manager of the Bee Gees. And my cousin Trevor Gordon used to be in the Bee Gees when he was in Australia, when he was about 14 or 15 years old. Hmm. It was called Trevor Gordon and the Bee Gees. And Trevor used to send me these records over that were recorded by the Bee Gees and him singing and playing guitar. Anyway, it's it went on that the guy in the audience, who was the ex-manager of the Bee Gees in Australia, came over to him. He was visiting London. I said, I'm sure that Barry and Morris and Robin would like to get to see you again, Trevor. So my cousin Trevor went over to Barry Gibb's house. I'm saying this very quickly. Went over to Barry Gibb's house and said, yeah, blah, blah, blah. They started to talk about what they wanted to do, and they wanted to record with my cousin again. So my cousin said, well, my cousin sings too. His name is Graham. And so like a couple of nights later, I went over to Barry Gibb's house and we started singing and playing guitars and singing Beach Boys and Beatles and Stevie Wonder and R&B stuff, whatever. And then the job bar. Hey! And then the job bar. No, that didn't happen.
It's all good. It's okay.
Yeah, so anyway, they sort of, Robert Stigwood came into the room. He was there. The manager of the Bee Gees. Hey. Oh.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
That's a dog that he's talking to, people.
And yeah, hey, spoil my whole story here. Just up on that about. Hang on.
That's okay.
Yeah, so there you go.
This the is what happened of, with this is what yeah, happened with Carrie. She's got to walk so, like a.
She's a lunatic. She's a good dog, but her mom has just got out to do some laundry, and I believe. Oh, it's a whole rock and roll story here.
So, that's okay. But,
Barry Gibb was asked by Robert Stigwood, their manager, to write a song for me and my cousin. And a couple of days later, we recorded a song. It was called Only One Woman. And we went into the chart later with this particular song. It was never released in America. It was released in England and all over the place, Europe. And it became like a number one in certain parts of Europe, but a number three in England. So we suddenly had a recording career. And from that, I'm getting around to the Rainbow thing. From that, they were playing Rainbow, Cozy Pal, Don Airey, etc. were sitting around playing What Spot That Tune. And my song with my cousin just happened to be one of the tunes they were playing on the cassette machine. Machine, remember those? And Richie said, where is this guy now? He sounds perfect for the band. So Roger, because he was working with Mickey Moody, you know, we got in touch and I went over, did the audition, as I said, and I still thought I wasn't right for the band, but they wanted me to be in the band because they wanted to change the image, apparently, to something a bit more so-called modern or radio-friendly.
Yeah.
And with me, they thought they would probably get that. So anyway, eventually we did get around to recording. It took a long time. Roger and I spent lots of hours in the studio putting the songs together. And the album became an album called Down to Earth. And an album I'm very proud of and very proud to have worked with those musicians. It was just a new turning point for me and apparently the band, because they wanted to become more radio friendly, a little bit more commercial probably. And they had this one song called Since You Been Gone that was very commercial and nobody wanted to record it in the band. So it's like, you've got to do it, said the bank manager, not the bank manager, the band manager. So the band under, tied up and handcuffed, went into the studio to do Since You Been Gone. And that changed the direction of Rainbow and me. The two, mighty whatever's clashed. And it was a good combination, I think. And I'm very glad that I did that in the end. And I think they were too.
That's great.
I don't know if I said that story properly. I'm all over the place. As I said, I'm just talking.
No, it's okay. Ah,
it's all good, brother. Great.
Sonny, you have a question.
Well, Graham, you had said, when you're recording, okay, so they want to go a little more commercial. You have some commercial songs. But at some point, the guy who loves Little Richard and Buddy Holly has to sing this Dungeons and Dragons Man on the Silver Mountain. So is there a conversation that happens with Richie saying, that's not going to sound the same. I'm going to have to do it my way here.
Yeah, I mean, I did it my way. And Frank Sinatra said it better than me. Yeah, I mean, I could not emulate or copy what Ronnie did. And that's one of the points I made. I said to my manager, at the time before I was in the band, I said, well, I don't sing like that. I've got a completely different voice. And that's apparently what they wanted. And I wasn't going to copy Ronnie's style because that's not what I do. You know, I said, I sing the way I sing, and that's it. But they wanted it to be that way, and it turned out pretty good. But it was weird coming in after a guy like Ronnie, who was very much kind of the, you know, Dungeons and Dragons guy, you know. I'm the guy with the short haircut and the suits.
Now, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is there's always that part where it says that all the songs were written by Richie and Roger. But I've heard, and I got the Martin Popoff book who talks about the Rainbows and you guys, that you've mentioned that a lot of that stuff were the melodies and stuff were came from you. So did you participate in the songwriting, and perhaps as the new guy didn't get any, a lot of the credit or something?
No, I didn't, because I didn't realize what I was doing. Roger would give me a basic tune, a very rough idea of a tune for, you know, the melody for each track. And we did each track probably four times in different, with different melodies, different lyrics, blah, 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 you know, like a verse and a chorus, whatever. And we'd choose from those, which is going to be, you know, the final product. But Roger gave me a vague idea of how to, you know, what melody should be sung here and there. And I just, he said, just do it your way, you know, take it where you would take it. And that's basically what I did on all the tracks. And I didn't realize I was songwriting until much later, many years later. And somebody said to me, where's your name on the credits? I said, what do you mean? but I didn't think writing was just singing and making it up as you go along.
Yeah.
After that, that's all I did. I made up as I went along. You know. Anyway, you want it, you know, do it, take it your way. So I didn't realize I was a songwriter until now. And now it's like, you know, a bit too late now, but.
Yeah. Now, so we're talking about, and by the way, I'll just say, was it last Christmas, Tom? Tom got me the Monsters of Rock live at Donington, where you guys were the closing band, headlined this for their first Monsters of Rock. You do justice to those Ronnie James Dio Rainbow songs. I love this. Love this. And I will tell you, I don't have a problem the way you sing those songs. I think it's, you know, it's not obviously Dio, but you still do a good job. And the whole album is incredible. Incredible.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's a lot. Yeah, because that was one thing I was kind of nervous of, because I wasn't your typical long-haired, you know, looking singer for a hard rock band, whatever Rainbow is. I don't know what you call it, heavy song, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Heavy metal band. I never saw them as heavy metal. I sort of heard that band as hard rock or heavy rock.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, you know, I didn't seem to fit. But anyway, it's in the end, it became that I did fit. But I remember one night, in fact, one of the first nights, We played somewhere, I've forgotten where the hell it was now, but in rehearsal, one of Richie Blackmore's favorite songs was "Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow?"
Yes. Anyway,
these guys were sitting in the front row and all giving me the finger and saying, "Fuck off, you fucking, you know."
Jesus.
"We want Ronnie," you know, all that kind of stuff. And so we went into "Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow?" So I went to the front of the stage, sat down at the front of the stage, and these guys were like, you know, 5 feet from me or whatever. And I said, "Tonight you're mine, completely." With all, the most romantic voice I could do. And they laughed and they laughed. And after that, they're on my side, you know.
Yeah, so won them over. Yeah.
But after that, it was fantastic. It was a bit of fun, and they realized I wasn't Ronnie Dio, and I didn't want to be. I can't emulate him. I don't want to copy him, you know. So anyway, that's the way it went.
Yeah.
And after that, everything became pretty good, because I had lots of good press, blah, 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 you know, and everybody knew what to expect after that, I think.
So you had the two big songs that we always talk about, you know, the All Night Long and Since You've Been Gone. Those are the ones that I think everybody will agree with, that really showcase the power of your vocals, the pop sensibility that you kind of had prior to coming into Rainbow. But Down to Earth also has a couple of songs that are a little bit, you know, kind of a little bit more somber, like Eyes of the World, Making Love. Were those songs, like, was that a challenge for you, or because it was very different from an upbeat pop like Since You've Been Gone. Those were a little bit more darker and somber. Was that something that you were used to in your previous career, or was that something that you kind of had to adjust for that?
Yeah, I mean, those songs, I love those songs, and I just sang them my way. But my voice is the same on these tracks on the Down to Earth album as they were back in 1968 when I was singing stuff with my cousin. It's the same voice, and that's the voice they wanted. And, it was very easy to adapt. It wasn't anything really new, but I understood that I got to be a little bit more raunchy or whatever. And but I wouldn't change my image because that's who I am. That's who I've always been, and I can't change the way I look. And I can't change the way I sing. If you want me to be in this band, it's not the way I look, it's the way I sing. And that's what happened. You know, people liked me after that. You know, I was very confident after that first gig when that happened. I thought, oh, this is fun. Perfect. And don't be scared, Graham. Go out there and, you know, show them what you do and do it your way. Mm-hmm. And people accept me for what I am. And suddenly I find myself, I'm in the heavy rock singer, you know, top 10 or whatever. I'm going, what the fuck is that? You know, I'm just a damn singer, for Christ's sake, you know. I'm not the heavy rock singer. I don't like being labeled. I don't think anybody does.
Right,
but,
right.
Suddenly I'm, you know, I'm like Bruce Dickinson or whatever, you know. Right. And Bruce is a friend of mine, so, he's a different kind of singer too.
Right.
So one of the things, Graham, I saw recently, I follow you obviously on social media, there's that kind of famous YouTube clip where Richie is, being kind of Richie, and he's talking about the story about the haircut and how the legend goes that he wanted you to grow your hair out. And so when you were on tour, he had somebody supposedly sit outside your room so you wouldn't go out and get a haircut. And then one day you jumped out the window. And you posted that video on your social media, and you're like, listen, people don't get Richie, and this is the truth about this. I would love if you could share that with our listeners, because that shows, this is one of the reasons why I'm really fond of you, because I think you got a great personality, and you're like, listen, everybody doesn't get Richie, and, you know, I trust the guys that were in the band with Richie to kind of explain him a little better, because he's got that reputation, and I'd love to hear that story and your relationship with Richie.
Well, my relationship with Richie was great. I always had great fun with him. He wasn't who he appeared to be, dark and moody. Yeah. He was a very shy person, picked his friends, etc. But that story is completely fake. What happened was we had an afternoon. I can't remember we were playing, but we had like the day off or something. And anyway, we had a day off, and then we're playing the next night. And that afternoon, I think we're in Edinburgh. I can't remember where exactly, but I was with my ex-wife, and my hair was getting scruffy. If you have short hair, you've got to keep it trimmed. You know what I'm saying? So, so I said to her, oh, while you're shopping, there's a barber shop over there, I'll go and get my hair trimmed. So that's what I did. There was no guard on the door. In fact, I had been to see our tour manager, Colin, and he said, yeah, I'm supposed to be the guy that's sitting on the door. I said, I know. Isn't it fantastic? We're like three flights up. I'm going to jump out the freaking window. Yeah, sure. This did happen at the Holiday Inn. You know what I'm saying? And no, I didn't do that. And I just find it very, very amusing that that story has lasted all this time. And Richie still adds little bits onto it now. He plays with it. And, you know, a little bit more here. Oh, should have hit him over the head with a guitar. You know, all this kind of stuff going on. But he would never have hit me over the head with a guitar. But what happened was when we actually did get on stage together to play and my hair was shorter, he looked at me. His mouth was wide. His mouth dropped. His jaw dropped. You're like, it was one of those things. And suddenly he sort of walks off very quickly behind his stack. And we never saw him for the rest of the night. He played behind his amps. And, he came back later for the encore, of course. I mean, he came out later, but for the first few songs, he wasn't there in protest because of my haircut.
Wow.
And the next day, we're all called to Rich's room. Band call, you know, and so we all had to go to Richie's room in the Holiday Inn, four floors up, and we thought, what the hell's going on here? What's this all about? And so we walk in the room, and Cozy said, Iris, what's happening, you know? And Richie said, it's Graham's hair. You know, like that, you know, like, ah, you know, get out the garlic or something. It was very, very strange and very funny. Everybody cracked up. You know, it's like, wow, are you kidding? When he's had his hair cut, you know, and there's, what? So, you know, what about it? You know, and so that was it. And then after that, there was no more problems about my fricking hair. But one day when we were on tour a little while, you know, after a month or whatever, my hair started to grow long. And I remember looking across the restaurant in the hotel room at the time, and he's giving me the thumbs up because my hair was like an inch longer than it normally is, you know. But I thought, oh, I better go get it cut again.
Well, it's funny because, you know, as we mentioned, like the legend, you know, the reputation of Ritchie Blackmore kind of precedes himself because people recognize him as a legend, as an icon in you know, guitar. But people always say, oh, but, you know, when they talk about, you know, is he difficult to work with? Does he, you know, is like you said, is he moody? Is he grumpy? Is he sour? Because and that's kind of like, oh yeah, Ritchie Blackmore's great, but now you were with him for a long time. It was only one album, but obviously touring, recording.
Yeah.
You had obviously a great experience with him. And I think that's important for us as Rainbow fans and for our listeners to hear that because a lot of, you know how like the legend goes with a lot of these classic performers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I got on with him very, very well. And by the way, I was never fired from the band.
Yeah.
I left the band after certain things happened within the band. And it kind of annoys me when I see that. No, I left and I was asked to go back, but I didn't go back. Anyway, okay. Richie and I got on pretty well. I would go to his dressing room every night and he had a bottle of, I think it was Jack Daniels, and he had a certain mark on it, you know. He said, well, Graham, if we drink it to about there, we should be about right. Should be about right. And I said, oh, yeah, that should do it, which it normally did. It was about, I don't know, a couple of inches. He had an inch of his, and yeah. That's how it went. So then he said, you ready? And, all right. And who are we going to play a joke on tonight? Oh, I don't know. What should we do? So we'd have jokes. We'd work out, you know, stage jokes. And one night it was, I remember it was when Kozier finished his drum solo, we came walking out with, you know, 10, 9, you know, numbers on cards. That was one thing we did. But it was always, you know, oh, 10 out of 10 goes, nah, it was an 8 tonight, sorry. But, you know, it was like that. And every night I would go into his dressing room and talk to him. He'd say, Graham, you're coming down. Yeah, I'll see you in a bit. And I would always have no problem with him. But I can see what it is because other people I've heard from who he's worked with have had a bad time with him. And I don't know why. I'm easygoing, very, very easygoing. And I think it's a problem from the other people that had the problem there, not necessarily him.
Interesting.
You know, I don't know anybody in particular, but I've heard this, but he's just a very, very, he keeps himself to himself. He wants his own space, you know, one of those guys, you know.
Interesting.
I remember in Japan when like 10,000 people were attacking him for autographs, he would sort of go, okay, that's enough now. And it was enough, you know, after a show.
Sure.
Go to your room. And that's all really, you know, he just wanted to, he didn't understand why you signed autographs. Neither do I, but you do. But, you know, that's who he is. Very much a keep himself to himself guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things I wanted to ask you is, and you're right, I've heard about the stories that sometimes get said that you were fired, but you ended up trying to do the next album, and then nothing really was coming of it. Now, am I mistaken, but did you record a version of I Surrender, and is it out there? Like, is it available?
Well, when we started rehearsing in Copenhagen, we were going to get ready to do the next album. There was me, Cozy had gone at this point. We had a new drummer, and it just wasn't the same without Cozy. We're very, very good friends, me, Cozy, and Don Airey, in fact, like the Three Musketeers. The three of us stuck together. We always had a laugh about the band. You know, we kept everything very lighthearted. Anyway, what was happening was, nobody's really turning up to rehearsals to start, you know, making up new songs. So one day there'd be like three of us there, another day there'd be two of us there, and then another day there'd be nobody there. And it was like the band had completely gone downhill. I thought the band was going to split up, to be honest with you. I thought that was it. And I said to Don Airey one day, I said, we don't have any songs. What the fuck are we doing? You know? And he said, I don't know, Graham said, but we do have one song from Russ Ballard. And we have this song called I Surrender. Mm-hmm. And Roger said, well, what we could do is go in while we're doing nothing. We could go in and you could do some backing vocals on that. And that's what I did. I did the backing vocals, no lead vocal at all.
Oh, okay.
I did some, I did the chorus vocals kind of thing. And after that was over, it's like, okay, what happens next? And so it went back to that kind of nothing rehearsal for the next album. And I said to Don, well, I think I'll go home. And Don said, I'm going to go home too. He said, I think this is going nowhere. He said, I think I will have more fun playing on the ships like I used to do. This is Don Airey. So yeah. He played like 10, you know, fucking opera singers and God knows what on these tours. So he said, I made a lot more money doing that. Anyway, he said, I'm going to go home because the fun has gone. And I said, same for me. So I went home, but Don Airey stayed. And I found out later, you know, they found another singer. And I got a call from Bruce Payne, the management. He said to me, well, Graham, do you want to come back? We found another singer who wants to sing. He started making up songs with the guys. And what about if you sing the songs you like and he sings the songs he likes? I'm going, no, it's not going to work with two singers, you know?
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was time for me to turn again, Whittington, as they say. You know, it's time to do something else. Mm-hmm. I should have stayed. I really should have stayed. But they found, you know, Joe Lynn, who's a great singer. And I think that's probably what Richie was really looking for. I remember when I first joined the band, he wanted to do like a Foreigner thing.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Who else? I mean, he was perfect, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's when I didn't go back. I decided to sweat it out and see what was going to happen next. So they went on without me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sonny.
Graham, do you remember making the videos? They were pretty much performance videos, but when we're watching them, and I don't know when was the last time you saw the two videos you guys made, but your energy and everybody else's energy is at a different level.
Right?
Like
it's
you
amazing.
Look like you're ready to party, discotheque. You're ready to rocker it out. And those four really? Other guys seem like they're in Deep Purple still.
Oh, I don't know. I always think I'm a bit boring. I used to say, well, what can I do on stage? I'm boring looking. I've got a freaking tie on sometimes, and sometimes the tie comes off. I thought, what can I do? And people said, what do you mean, what can you do? You're doing it. And I don't realize what I'm doing. It must be something that I forget about next day or something. Oh, man, you're really great tonight. In what way? You know, I was. I thought you were great. I didn't see anything really good coming from me. And I never really... Well, in the last few gigs we've done recently with my band, I suddenly realized, oh, yeah, this is going well, going very well. The band sounds fucking great, and I'm really pleased with the way I sound. And I never say that. It was like, I remember after one of the first gigs we did this year, my guitar player said to me, Graham, that could be a DVD. That sounds so damn good. We won't have to fix anything. And I'm going, oh, shit, really? And to hear that from this
That's
guy, awesome. You know.
Yeah.
And then the second night and the third night and whatever, he said, it's so much, you got so much energy, you're singing really great. And I thought, I am? But I said, don't play it to me, whatever you do. Because I'll just say, no, that's fucking crap. Because I hit every bump note, you know what I mean? I hear every flat note, every sharp note, every cough, every squeak, you know? But he said, no, there's none of that there. So I obviously had a lot of energy, even though I was probably half asleep. No, I wasn't. But, you know, I'm 195 years old now, and it's people say, how the hell do you do this still? You know, I say, well, this is my job, this is all I do. And if I don't do it well, then I might as well not fucking do it, you know? But so I never think I am doing well. But when I'm praised for that, I accept the praise and go, oh, you may be right, you know? once in a while, you know, my ego kicks in and goes, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, yeah.
You know?
But this is anything I've done, you know, even, you know, when I've recorded an album, it's like, I'll listen to that in a year, you know. There's always, you hear every little breath, every mistake, every, you know, note that wasn't quite right or something, you know. So it's been good so far, and we had great reviews on the stuff we've been doing recently, and it's really pleased me. And on the album, by the way, on the Graham Bonnet album, so the Bonnet
awesome.
Band.
Well, your awesome. Career is legendary. Your vocals, from everybody that I've heard and reviewed and seen you say, you're one of the guys that are still doing it at your age, and yeah. You know, still sounds terrific. But I want to piggyback on what Sonny just said to you about those old videos.
Yeah.
There is a version of Since You've Been Gone where the vocals are completely different in the second verse. Like you, so was there two different cuts of that song? Because I tried to find it.
They piece together different concerts, don't they, and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm not
sure. Could be. I was probably going, what's the worst of Since You've Been Gone? How could I forget Since You've Been Gone? Do you know one night I did? you sing it, yeah. Give the microphone to the bloody audience, you know, who sang it perfectly. But one night I did actually forget the words to that, and I don't know why. It was a brain fart, you know, the ultimate brain fart. I've sung that song probably 8,000 times, you know, and sometimes that does happen. But what you've probably seen is probably different clips from different nights, I would think.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear. The only other things I wanted to ask you real quickly about were the last two songs on Down to Earth, Danger Zone and Lost in Hollywood. I think vocally, maybe I'm wrong, they seem to be, I think, your best part. Like your performance on those are not easy songs to sing. And I think you really hit it out of the park. And those are the two deep cuts that I wish people would gravitate to. But they always hear the singles and think that's what the whole album is. Yeah, but those two last songs are fantastic.
You played Lost in Hollywood.
Lost in Hollywood and Danger Zone. Yeah, I love those. Those are my two probable favorites.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time on Danger Zone. I remember doing the backing harmonies to that. I think the backing harmonies kind of, to me, are better than the song almost. I like the backing harmonies. They really drive the song, and they were very difficult to do. I remember really taking a lot of time over that. And whereas Lost in Hollywood, I had a crate of beer beside me, and I had to catch a plane. I'll never forget this. And Roger said, we've got to get this last track done, Lost in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And the crate of beer there was like 10 beers, and I drunk, I don't know, 8. I don't know about 8 of them. So, how come you're still fucking standing? I said, well, you know, but that, if it wasn't for those beers, I don't think Lost in Hollywood would be the same. I'm not sure.
God bless you then, because you nailed it.
I just love singing it. It's always like the last song we do, you know. It's a great song, and the words are good too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sonny.
Graham, you were talking about the myth about the haircut. Okay. Yeah. So there's another myth out there. That Yngwie tried to strangle you once? Is that a myth also?
No, that's a mister. That's not a myth. It's a myth. It's absolutely true.
Jesus.
Yeah, that was a night I'll never forget, actually. We're playing this big, pretty big show. You know, I remember it was really happening. And it was coming to Yngwie's solo. And I had my dark glasses on as usual. And I went off stage, walked back, and actually fell over the stage at the back. It was a long drop, about 10 feet or something. And I landed on those barrier things, they're like hurdles they're using, hurdling. Those things, they were back there, and I hit my chest on it. I'll never forget that. And I cracked two ribs. Anyway, I went out to the bus, and Yngwie came rushing out and said, "You fucking can't, you fuck." And he got hold of my neck and started strangling me, pushing his thumbs as hard as he could into my throat. Really, really hard. I said, "Wow, you pulled my lead out, man." I said, "No, I didn't pull his lead out at all." When he's doing the solo, would I really do that? Never in a million years. It's like taking a drumsticks off of a drummer. Would I do that? No, of course I
wouldn't.
And he thought I'd done it on purpose, but I didn't see. I tripped over it, obviously, because I have the fucking glass in them. And it was a mistake, I'll never forget. Anyway, he started to put his thumbs like really hard into my throat, really, really hard. I mean, I'm not kidding. He tried to flop me. And one of our crews, a Hungarian guy, I remember, he's a very big Hungarian guy, looked like a freaking wrestler. He grabbed all the Yngwie's head, put his head under his arm like this, you know, touch Graham again, I fucking kill you, he said.
Yeah.
And that was the end of that evening and the end of Yngwie being in the band. And unfortunately, the band didn't take such a good turn after that, because Yngwie was undoubtedly a star in that band. No doubt.
Right, right.
Wow. Now, what would you say the comparison between Yngwie in Richie. Do you have your thoughts?
Hey, Ingve was great at first when he first joined the band. It was fantastic. But then when he saw the audience really enjoying him more than anything, watching him do all his guitar playing, which was incredible to watch. You know, this was a kid, he was 19.
Yeah.
And he's playing all this stuff. Wow, look at that. And this kid is amazing. You know, you can't see what a singer does or whatever, in the throat. But, a guitar player, you can see what he's playing. And it's what he was doing was amazing.
Right.
And he knew this. And he started to when I was doing my bit, for instance, in a song, he would start going, through a verse or something and stand in front of me, and he's taller than me. It's about, he's taller than me. And it didn't work. I said, Ingve, please, just give me my room when I'm doing my bit. It's my bit. Then it's your bit. It's your bit. And that's his ego grew to fucking gigantic size.
Yeah.
And it was like, we might as well not have been there, really.
Right.
So eventually, as as I said, we fired him up. He tried to kill me on the bus that way, on the way home. And that was that. And he became very, very well known and still doing very, very well.
Yeah.
And the band took a dive, because we didn't have Ingve anymore.
Yeah. Wow. The other guitar great that you played with was Michael Schenker Group. Now, I love this album. Assault Attack is one of my favorite songs. I think you kill it on this. Any chance you want to tell us a little bit about the infamous story in Sheffield?
Oh, that one.
Yes.
Blame the Whitesnake guys for getting you drunk. That's just blame them.
What? the one about the pants.
I don't think you played with him after that. Did you ever talk with him again? Have you ever reconnected
with Michael? I've been playing with Michael a couple years ago.
Perfect.
Yeah, and we got back. They did a tour. Michael did a tour of all the singers, and we all sing our songs that we recorded with him, and blah blah blah. Backing vocals for that guy, backing vocals, so we played together. That's all right now. It's all good now. And Michael and I get on very, very well now, I'm glad to say. But it was, again, it was Mickey Moody's fault. No, it wasn't. It was, it sort of was. But they were, of all mistakes I make, which back then was always the mistake I made, going to a freaking pub. And in the pub was the Whitesnake guys. And they were all drinking, hey, great mate, blah, blah, blah. God. Yeah, they were opening up for us, I think, or something. Anyway, they were playing, and I had a drink or six with them. And I said, oh, crap, I'll buy this round. And I found that I didn't have my wallet in my pocket. So I went back to the theater, and I knocked on the dressing room door where my jacket was, and I couldn't open it for some reason. It was Michael in there. He locked the door. And I heard, who is he? I said, Graham. Oh, fuck off. I'm sleeping. What? I said, Michael, I need my wallet. My wallet is in my jacket in there. Can I get it? No, fuck off. Oh, okay. So that wasn't good from the start. It's like, oh, fucking hell. Is this going to get worse tonight or what? And it did. It got much worse. And I went back to the pub. Those guys were buying the drinks and they said, don't worry about it, Graham, blah, 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 blah. And so, I was drinking like crazy, then back to the show, drinking in the dressing room. And by the time I got on stage, I didn't know where the hell I was, I don't know who I was. And I had these jeans made a couple of days previous. We get jeans made in 1 hour in Oxford Street in London. And they were very flimsy jeans. And apart from other things going on stage, I couldn't, I was freaking out. These jeans split. My zipper broke and my penis fell out. I don't wear underwear. And it was the beginning of a whole new career for me, basically. It was the end of my career with the Michael Schenker Band. Because I started swearing at the audience, going, oh, fuck it, telling me to fuck off or whatever. What had happened, the audience, because we had floor monitors and I had 2,000 songs written out on a piece of paper down on the floor, they pushed forward the monitors and crunched up all these damn words to, you know, the Michael Schenker albums I wasn't on.
Yeah.
That Gary Barton had done.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all these songs, you know, the mine songs as well as his. So I couldn't read anything. And I said, you fucking, I started swearing. I didn't care what the hell I said. And I just went, look here, I walked off stage. And I said, I pulled back this curtain. I said, this is the guy that's playing rhythm guitar. Behind the curtain was somebody playing rhythm guitar.
Oh, like, oh no.
Yeah. So, you know, so it was not a good thing to do.
Yeah. And
I, at that point, I was out of the theater real quick because one of our guys, a big youth, his name was, he said, Graham, I better get out of here real quick, you know. He said, you're going to fucking kill you. I said, really? They are? With what? You know, but get out of here, you fucking shipper. I said, yes, I am. So you get back to the hotel. Got back to the hotel, ordered a cab next morning really quickly, got on a train back to London, and we're supposed to have a big show coming up in a day or so. And I said, I can do this. You know, I can do this show. And they didn't want to know. And they fired me. Well, wow. Absolutely. Wow. Right. And why not? You know, I messed up big time, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
But we love how the fact is, like, you say it straight. You don't play games. You would, you know, you have this amazing way of, like, telling stories and not bullshitting. And not hedging and not saying anything that's not true. And it's amazing. And it's one of the reasons I'm quite fond of you and your career. But before we let you go, Tom has one last question for you.
No! All right.
Yeah. So Graham, so our podcast is primarily, we do album reviews, but we spend a lot of time talking about the band Kiss. So we want to know. Any thoughts on the band? Any thoughts on Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons? Anything on their career, their history? Do you know them? Have you ever been around them? Any thoughts on Kiss in their career?
Well, I'm just amazed at what they've done over the years, and they're still doing it, you know. And I got to meet Gene Simmons about, I don't know, 5 years ago or something. And my Bethany's son was a big Kiss fan.
Yep.
And somebody asked, Gene, if he would sign an autograph for him, you know. And so me and Bethany went back, and he signed it. He said, now, what's his name? Got his name and said, because he's a drummer.
Yeah.
Her son, you know, he's amazing. He's a really good drummer. He's only been playing for very, very few years, but he's turned into this incredible drummer. Like, nice. I don't know. And so Gene said, I'll give him I'll give him a message for him. And he did that for him. I was absolutely blown away. I thought, this guy's going to be, you know, you think Gene Tumor, you know, he's another one, got this hard reputation.
Right.
But he's nothing like that. The guy was such a sweet man. And he's awesome. Really pleased to meet you, Graham. You know,
nice.
And all that. He was very open. I said, I'm glad to meet you. And thank you for doing that. Bethany thanked him so much for doing this message for Levi, her son. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've never been a Kiss fan at all, but suddenly that day I was.
Yeah,
One of my friends, you know, one of the Kulik brothers, not Bob Kulik, was in the band for a short time.
Yeah, Bruce.
Bruce.
Yeah, and Bob said, because I was playing with Bob at the time, Bob said, we've got to go and see Bruce because they do it without the makeup and everything. And I was pretty impressed. I was very impressed. I've never seen them play at all, but Bruce had a good time with them, and you know. Bruce is a good guy. And I was, as I said, I was just blown away by Gene's really wonderful attitude. You know,
nice.
That's great. Now, Graham, what do you got going on right now? Where are you touring? Do you, your latest album? Tell people where they can get info on you, anything.
Yeah, well, you go to the band page somewhere, wherever it is, the Graham Bonnet Band.
Yeah.
Just look in there. And the album is called Day Out in Nowhere. And I'm very proud of it. And we're going out on tour in about, 3 weeks, maybe. We're going to Japan, which would be nice. And also, I think we're playing in Chicago. I'm not sure. That hasn't been settled yet. I'm not quite sure. But gigs are few and far between, as you probably know. everybody's like going home because of the COVID thing, and
people
resigning at my age. They're going, oh, I've got enough of this, you know. So we started playing. We're going to start rehearsing very soon because I'm very proud of what we've done. I'm very proud of the two videos we made on this song. You know, there's two songs on there, I should say. One's called Imposter, and the other one's called Uncle John, which both of them have a huge amount of truth in them.
Okay.
The words, you know. So I'm very proud, you know, Bethany, Conrad, you know, we're the roots of the band. There's me, Bethany, Heavenstone, and Conrad Personale. We're the roots of that band.
Yep.
We've had a couple of different players, you know, drums and keyboards, which we're probably going to change on this. I don't know yet, but, you know, I can't really say who it's going to be. But I think, you know, we've got the songs. We're the main songwriters. And so, you know, that album, I'm so proud of it. The sound on that, Conrad did a great job, and Bethany did a great job working for the album. She really did. And so the sound on the album is one of the best vocal sounds I've heard, actually. It really, really. It really picks up every nuance, you know. And that's what I always used to be missing when I was a lad, back in 68, they would bring out different microphones. Now that doesn't sound like you. And they put a whole bunch, you know, like a bunch of flowers. So sing into that one now. Now sing into this one. Now sing to that
one. Wow.
That's a 58, that's a 57, that's a 91, that's a 126, and that was WD, you know, WD40. Yeah, so it's like, and that, but this microphone, and I can't remember what it is, the freaking serial number or anything, but it's a really good vocal mic. And Conrad really worked hard on that to make it sound like me instead of like somebody singing in the other room, you know, which kind of happens sometimes. And I like all the tracks on there, especially Imposter and Uncle John. They're the two videos we did.
Yep.
And they are pretty good. I'm very, very proud of it. I'm proud of the band. I'm proud of the people I'm working with. And I'm glad they don't hate me.
Well, thank you, Graham. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sonny.
One more quick thing, Graham. What is it about Japan that embraces certain artists? Like, there's certain American brands that can't even get arrested in Japan, but then they love... Like when they're loyal to somebody like a Graham Bonnet, man, they are loyal to the hilt.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I known people there for since 1980, you know, and they're all growing old now, losing their hair and gray. And that's only the women, you know. But you know what I'm saying. But I mean, they're the most loyal fans ever. And I remember Cozy saying to me the first time I went over there, he said, you know, when we get there, he said, you won't fucking believe it. You won't believe it. I said, what do you mean I won't believe it? He said, just wait till we get there. And it was like Beatles time, but for Rainbow. It was unbelievable. You know, the people on the train station, at the hotel, la, 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 people following us in cars and all this kind of stuff, going to the restaurants we went to, if we get to a restaurant without being seen. It was just amazing. They love Richie to death. They love Cozy. They love the whole damn band. They love the music. And I still see those people today. And when when this album came out, they embraced it absolutely. You know, they follow my stuff as well as Rainbow. You know, so it's been really, really nice. So, and I appreciate what they do. It's just I want to play here. I like to get out of bed in the morning and not have to get on a plane. Sort of, you know, get in a car maybe, but not in this country. Somehow has not quite heard what we do. I don't know what it is, but we never play here. Very, very rarely. We do a short tour here and there, but not a real long tour, which is something we're looking to get, you know.
Well, hopefully you can come up to the Northeast, like Boston area.
Yeah. I mean, anybody that's listening, please.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
we ain't bad. You know, we ain't bad at all. You know, we've got a good band, as I said. And the material's good. And we do a little bit of everything. We do a bit of Rainbow, a bit of Michael Schenker, a bit of Impediteri even. A bit of everything, you know. So, some good song.
Well, we can't thank you enough for your time. You've been very gracious. It's an honor to have you. We love your performance on this. And you're continuing this legendary rock career. And we hope that you do come around and a lot of the listeners get to, you know, hear you in this new band and your new album. The legendary Graham Bonnet, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Graham, thank you so much. This has been great. Thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate everything you've done and your stories. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Did you understand? I hope so. I
babble. Oh, absolutely. No.
It's been great.
All right, guys. Sonny, thoughts?
Well, you got to love an interview that you ask three questions and it lasts, 55 minutes.
Exactly.
I think Graham asked and answered his own questions. Like he didn't even need anybody to ask a question. He was awesome.
Fucking an absolute, what a guest. I mean, like Zeus said at the beginning, when we interview these people, like, okay, is he going to be serious? Is he going to be we don't know. You can tell he loves to talk. And you could tell he loves to tell stories. And when he tells the stories, he's telling them as if they just happened yesterday and they happened 45, 50 years
ago. I love he got up and left.
He pulled the Kerry Stevens. He got up in the middle of the thing. But the funny thing is, he didn't hold anything back. Tell us about the time Ingvi Malmsteen choked you. Or tell us the time you're... fucking incident where your dick came out, or the haircut story.
Yeah,
and just it was a lot of fun, and we hope that the rest of these that we do will be just as fun, and we'll have more coming down.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, hearing story like meeting somebody like that, hearing stories. I don't know about you, it changes for me. It changes the way you now listen to the music. So, like, the next time I hear since you've been gone, I'm going to be like, that guy got choked by Ingvi. like, you know what I mean? Like, but he was so proud of his time. He had a nice sense of humor. Like, he was, like, just a really pleasant man.
Yeah. So, between the three of us.
Yeah.
We have spent over 150 years on this planet.
Wow. Yeah.
Who the hell makes jeans in an hour? That might have been part of the problem.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
I just love that Sonny thought of, and I was like, so those videos.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Because he looked so different. We talked about it when we did the album review. It's like, he looks like he's ready to go party. The other four guys are told not to move.
Yeah.
That was
like,
great. That was great.
This was a lot of fun. And hopefully there'll be more down the line.
That's right.
Peace out, Girl Scout.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frenino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.